Number eight, which is also a permit review and briefing, and that's Puget Sound Fisheries Endangered Species Act, ESA permit review. So Kyle and Mike.
Thank you again, Chair Smith, Commissioners. Again, I'm Kyle Laddix, the Intergovernmental Salmon Manager with the Fish Program. When I interviewed for this position, I told them repeatedly that I'm a biologist and not an attorney. Luckily, I have an attorney with me today, Mr. Grossman from the Attorney General's Office. We were asked to give a presentation, a briefing on permitting for Puget Sound fisheries. I think it was obviously a result of last year's North of Falcon and the delay in getting our fisheries permitted and opened late spring, early summer. So I'm going to give a presentation. I've encouraged Mike to jump in along the way if he has something to add, and I'm sure he'll do so. So I'm going to cover a few areas, just some general background on the Endangered Species Act, some specifics on the Puget Sound Chinook listing, a review of the past and current ESA authorizations for Puget Sound salmon fisheries, and then a little bit on planning for future ESA coverage. I'm sure most of you are familiar with the Endangered Species Act, which was enacted in 1973 and has been amended several times since then. It provides for the conservation of species that are endangered or threatened throughout all or a significant part of their range. I'm not going to tell you about all 18 sections, because honestly, I don't know a lot about all 18 sections, but I'm going to concentrate on a few that you'll hear referenced and are kind of critical to permitting for Puget Sound and other salmon fisheries around the state. And those are Section 4, Section 7, and Section 9. Section 9 talks about prohibited acts, and it says that it's unlawful to take a species listed as endangered. It also says that that prohibition on take can be extended by regulation to a species listed as threatened. And as you probably know, Puget Sound Chinook are listed as threatened. And it defines what take means. It is to harass, harm, pursue, hunt, shoot, wound, kill, trap, capture, or collect, or attempt to engage in these activities. So a wide range of things that might affect the species are covered. Section 4 of the Act has general stuff on procedures for listing, critical habitat designation, recovery plan implementation, those sort of things. But of particular interest is Section 4D, which concerns protective regulations. And it says that whenever any species as listed as threatened pursuant to subsection C, the Secretary shall issue such regulations as he deems necessary and advisable to provide for the conservation of such species. And for salmon and steelhead, NOAA, who's the agency in charge of these listings, says that that ESA take prohibition is extended to threatened species, but it's also identified circumstances where incidental take of a threatened species is permitted. Section 7 is about interagency cooperation at the federal level, and it requires all federal agencies to ensure that their actions and the actions that they authorize, fund, or carry out are not likely to jeopardize the continued existence of listed species or adversely modify their critical habitat. This duty is typically undertaken by a federal action agency through a consultation either with NOAA or the Fish and Wildlife Service, depending on the species. NOAA then produces a biological opinion that evaluates whether the proposed federal actions will jeopardize any listed species. There are several forms you can get take protection for an activity that may take a listed species. Section 4D with the regulatory limits is one. Through that, you apply to NOAA or Fish and Wildlife Service for authorization for the activity. If approved after a consultation, they set incidental take limits and apply terms and conditions to those activities. Section 7 is available if there's some federal nexus, some underlying federal agency involvement that can trigger that consultation. And again, there's a resulting incidental take statement that provides the protection. And lastly is Section 10, conservation planning. That allows direct take for certain activities, scientific research activities, and enhancement activities to keep the species there. Also allows incidental take when it's accompanied with a conservation plan.
I have a question. Does it actually say in the document nexus? or that, I know that's a term we've evolved to using. Does it actually say that? And if so, maybe the counselor could explain to me what nexus means. And it's kind of...
So, again, this comes under the rubric of the Section 7 consultation where you've got some federal action. And sometimes we use a... So if the federal government is facilitating something that we do, they have to do some kind of a consultation. A lot of times you can get, and so that's generally part of like a Section 4 permit application, but sometimes where there's a federal action involved with funding and they facilitate your action, you the entity that's doing the activity that the federal government is facilitating through funding, you get the benefit of that federal agency's take protection. It flows down through. Now, the concept of nexus is just in establishing this federal involvement in something that you, the entity engaged in incidental take, is doing. And you know, the word nexus, I don't think it's part of the statutory language, but it's that it's a concept, and people have used the word nexus to describe that concept. So the idea is, can you identify a federal action agency that's facilitating the thing that you, the incidental taker, are doing? And typically that's through some kind of federal funding activity. It could be the issuance of a permit. It could be any number of different things. But that's essentially what nexus means. It means if you're going to try and hang on to the take protection that goes directly to the federal agency, you have to have some federal involvement that allows for that Section 7 consultation.
Okay, thank you.
Moving on to the listing of Puget Sound Chinook, they were listed as threatened under the Endangered Species Act in 1999. And then in 2000, NOAA published what we call the 4D rules, the 4D protective regulations for Puget Sound Chinook and a number of other listed salmon evolutionary significant units, or ESUs. And in those rules, they extended the take prohibitions to the threatened species, but also identified various incidental take limits. Those take limits were a list of programs to which the take prohibition would not apply, provided that those programs do not appreciably reduce the likelihood of survival and recovery of the ESU. And there were, I believe, 13 limits in that rule. The three that are of most interest to salmon management activities are limits 4 through 5. 4 is state fishery management activities. 5 is hatchery and genetic management activities. And 6 was harvest activities in compliance with state tribal plans developed within USV Washington or USV Oregon. Because listed Chinook are incidentally harvested or harmed during salmon fisheries, we do need take protection for those activities. So the state and the tribe submitted a series of harvest plans, also called resource management plans, under Limit 6 of the 4D rule. There were plans submitted in 2001, 2003. Then in 2004, there was a longer-term 6-year plan. And finally, in 2010, there was what was originally submitted as a 5-year plan, but later modified to be a 4-year plan. I won't go into the details of that, but it involved killer whales and other things. But so the last long-term plan covered fisheries from 2010 to 2013. A little more detail on what those plans were. When you hear the term Puget Sound Chinook Harvest Management Plan, not to be confused with the Puget Sound Salmon Management Plan that Pat spoke to in his comments, these plans aren't specific to fisheries or allocation. They set biological limits on the exploitation rates we can have on these stocks. They're based on individual stock population-based data. Each year, the fisheries are planned through the North of Falcon process to make sure that the combination of fisheries don't exceed those limits. And that's not just fisheries in Puget Sound. That's fisheries everywhere from Alaska to British Columbia to the ocean into Puget Sound and into the freshwater rivers. And again, that the plan doesn't allocate harvest. It doesn't set fisheries. That's the process we go through in North of Falcon each year, is to set our fisheries to make sure that we meet the requirements of the plan that's been submitted and approved by NOAA. And this is more detailed than you need to look at, but it's just to give you an idea of the number of populations involved. There are 15 management units and 25 individual stocks, each of which have management objectives set so that fisheries have to meet them once we're done planning and implementing them. And just a little specific on the sort of things we're managing for, this is an example for Skagit, Summer Fall, Chinook. Fisheries are managed to not exceed an exploitation rate ceiling of 50%, but we also have lower abundance thresholds, so if a population is weak, we limit fisheries further to make sure we don't adversely affect those populations, and that's what the CERC, or critical exploitation rate ceiling, is. So if we had a projection that one of these stocks was going to have an escapement below those numbers, we'd further restrict fisheries to those numbers. So, as I said, the last multi-year plan was expired at the end of 2013. The co-manager, state and tribes' intent, as that expiration date approached, was to submit a new multi-year plan to NOAA, but there were a few obstacles in our way. One was the need to update the model that we use for planning fisheries each year, which is known as FRAM, or the Fishery Regulation Assessment Model, to a more recent set of data. The current base data in that model is from the late 70s. Stock distributions and fisheries have changed a lot since then, so everyone acknowledged we needed to update that and base our science on more recent data. There was also a need to update management strategies for some of our management units. And the last obstacle is that it takes NOAA longer to evaluate a multi-year plan than it does a one-year plan. So we need to be way out ahead in submitting a multi-year plan so that NOAA has time to go through their analysis and administrative process for approval. So in 2014, 15, and 16, the co-managers agreed on one-year plans that were very similar to the last multi-year plan in 2010, with some modifications to management objectives, some additional information on management strategies for some of the populations, and submitted those to NOAA prior to the start of the North of Falcon process. And now here's that word again, Larry, Nexus. The Bureau of Indian Affairs requested Section 7 consultations on those plans based on the federal funding nexus. The BIA funds some of the tribal fishery management activities, requested consultation based on that. NOAA then took the one-year management plan that the co-managers had submitted along with the fisheries plan, this is the fisheries we're going to implement this year, analyzed that, completed the consultation, and issued their biological opinions covering fisheries by early May. With the exception of 2016, it was late June before that occurred this year. So 2016 was a little different. The co-managers were still working out a couple details on their management plan going into North of Falcon, but essentially by early March, we knew what the objectives were and were planning fisheries to meet those. The snag came at the end of North of Falcon when the co-manager still hadn't reached agreement on a fisheries package that met all of the objectives in that management plan. And so the completion of the co-manager agreement and the resulting consultation were delayed until late June. Once they were approved, there was another one-year authorization. It's actually less than a year, but it will expire at the end of what we call the fisheries year on April 30th, 2017. So planning for future ESA coverage, we are almost done with this multi-year project to update the FRAM base period, which has been one of our holdups. Now we need to go back and review our management objectives. We've essentially changed the currency of what we think our fisheries are doing to these stocks, and we need to update the objectives to reflect that new information. And we'll be working on that over the next few months with the intent of having an updated plan, updated objective submitted to NOAA by the end of February. We're hoping to use that as the launching point, the objectives we work out over the next few months, to not only get a one-year coverage for 2017, so for 2017 that will be something similar to this year, a federal nexus, one-year Section 7 consultation, but we're turning that into a multi-year plan that we hope could be approved and in place as soon as 2018. One of the major challenges is there, again, is the length of time it'll take NOAA to do a multi-year plan analysis and whether we can get the plan to them, they can have it done and in place in time for 2018 fisheries. With that, I'll ask Mike if I missed anything he wanted to add.
That's a pretty good summary, but if you have questions, we have some time to entertain those.
Yes, we do have time. Questions from the commission?